This is Vectis Radio.
For the people, by the people.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and my special guest today, Rebecca Blashford. Welcome, Rebecca.
Hello.
Hi. Rebecca, you own the lovely Bebicino, have I said that right, Bebicino?
Yep, yeah.
Bebicino Cafe in Newport, which I would imagine is an absolute godsend for mums and little kids. Because I get the impression it's somewhere they can go without the disapproving looks of everybody tutting because their child is making too much noise or too much mess. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. Our sales line when we were first started was, you know, we can keep the kids out of some of the other places because actually they're allowed to come and be children, and if they spill a drink, it doesn't matter if they have a scream, if they have a tantrum, if they laugh, if they make a mess, you know, if they're just kids, basically allowed to be kids, which is what we just don't, you know, as a society generally, we still, there's very much a perception that you expect kids to sit down and be quiet and smile and not make a noise and not want to get up and play and not want to throw their food on the floor when they're weaning, or, you know, so it's very different in that way.
Lovely. So how does the noise level rack up in there?
Oh, it gets pretty awesome. Yeah. It's not relative to how many children are in there. Randomly, sometimes the more children are in there, the quieter it is. They also seem to play together then, whereas if there's a couple, it's like there's a big space and it's a quiet space and I've got to fill it.
Okay. So it's that the noise isn't just the mums kicking off then?
No.
And have you got toys there and activities, or is it just cat food, coffee?
Yeah, we've got quite a lot. Part of my brief to myself is that we are a very electronic universe now, and children are, you know, from the age of like 1.5, 2 can go onto phones and iPads and various other things and play games and watch films and you know, they can pick up the remote control and work everything. So I have no electric. We're very much a creative and imaginative space, so everything for me has to fall into one of those categories. So we have an art and craft area, which we have everything from colouring to drawing to sticking. We have clay work sometimes and special workshops, but we also mix up special window paints, and the kids can paint on the windows, which is quite good fun. The walls are chalkboard. Then we have a quiet book corner, we have a play castle, which is wheelchair accessible. Inside we have lots of dress up, everything from dragons to knights to princesses to, I think we've got Darth Vader in there at the moment as well. And then we have a train set.
Can I come in? I haven't got a baby, but
yeah,
I just want to come in.
Fine.
It sounds great.
That's cool. We have a train set, and there is, it's kind of waist length, waist height for an adult, and there's holes in it, so the kids can go under the train set and come up and play all the way around them. We often swap that for pirate toys or various other things. We have play kitchens, we have Play-Doh. A couple of our mums make the Play-Doh, and it's normally got glitter in or sparkles of some description. It's normally got a scent, so we have Christmas spice, or we have chocolate or lemon oil or lavender. That was quite nice. Everyone was much calmer on that day. And then we have a small amount of soft play, as well as classes and groups. We have a lady who comes and does some singing with the kids and plays some instruments. It's considering how many people come in, it's quite a chilled out space, because the kids just get on and play, and the parents can actually have a conversation or actually finish a coffee. We do have people who come in who, they are the only person in their group of friends that have children, and they've tried other places and the kid just wants to be a kid, and mum's just going, I'm pulling my hair out, I just want to meet up with my friends and have a coffee and actually have a whole conversation.
Yes.
So, you know, sometimes we'll have four people coming together with one child, and the kid will just go and play, and the parents will go, yeah, it's okay, we can have our conversation now. And it's actually more relaxing for the parents than the stress level of having to go somewhere else.
Yes, oh, I can see that. I remember those days when my daughter was younger. Yeah, and you land up being far more concerned about the other people in the cafe than you do about your own child, because you're trying to sort of contain them so much that, like you say, you don't enjoy it, the child doesn't enjoy it. And the more you try and quiet them down, the louder they get.
Yeah, and the more cross you get. And, yes, you know, there's definitely... a perception from other people who you feel are like looking down on you, if your child is making a noise or if they can't see back or drop something or drop a drink or you push chairs in the way. You know, there's as a parent you kind of pick on that up on that pretty quickly, and the way lots of people deal with it is they then get crosser with our kids, and then because we've got crosser with our kids, they're then like, well, I'm just doing what I would normally do, just being a kid, and they then behave badly.
That's
so
right.
It just becomes a big circle.
Racked up the momentum, haven't you, of horror.
Yeah. For something that's just perfectly normal, but because we're being disapproved of, we kind of almost pass the disapproval down to our kids who actually are just being kids.
Exactly. I have to just say at this point for people listening in now, Rebecca is an amazing lady of many, many talents, and a little bit later we're going to be talking about her dancing with snakes. So it's not all about Baby Chino. There's another side to this woman, and if you've seen her photo on Facebook, all dressed up in the Middle Eastern dance costume with this enormous snake wrapped around her neck, you will know how super incredible she is. So I can't wait to get onto that, but at the moment that's just a little taste of something to come. And I just wanted to, if anybody's listening thinking I don't have children, maybe this isn't relevant, you want to listen later, because I think it will all be very relevant. So going back to the cafe, I know a little bird told me you won a Venus Award.
I did, I won two.
Wow.
Which is kind of exciting. We were actually nominated by one of our customers.
Was that this year?
Yeah, this year.
So Baby Chino's only been going 1 year, isn't it?
Just over a year.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
So in that year, you've managed to win two major awards.
Yes.
That's fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. So tell us, because this is for business women, is that correct?
Yeah, it's, yes. Known as the Working Women's Oscars, and it's just for women's awards, basically saying that, you know, the women have to work significantly harder than our male counterparts to receive the same level of recognition for the work that we do. And yeah, it was a really lovely experience the whole way through. I have to say I did really enjoy it. A lot of it was public vote.
That's always great, isn't
yeah.
it? So that proves you're doing absolutely everything right,
yes.
aren't you? Keeping your customers happy.
Yeah. We got nominated. We'd only been there, I think we opened in the June. I think the nominations had to be in by about January. And to have won public vote and actually come away from the Island Awards ceremony with the award for customer service.
Yes, that's fantastic. Because am I right in thinking Venus Awards are nationwide?
Yes.
Yes, and you won for the Island.
Yes.
Brilliant.
And then we went on to win the National Customer Service Award as well. Which for a small business that, you know, has yet to make a profit, the fact that we actually are customers, and indeed the other businesses within the Venus were voted for us to win the best customer service by a woman-owned business in the UK, is phenomenal, really.
So in terms of customer service, what is it that, I mean, we've spoken a lot about what you're doing in terms of allowing the children to be children so people can relax. In terms of, is there anything else within that realm of customer service that Baby Chino offers that perhaps other people don't offer?
Yeah, I don't know any other cafe that's put a sleepy mum to sleep on the sofa with a cushion and woken her up with a cup of tea 2 hours later.
Can you just come and live with me, Rebecca? I like this style.
Well, we do forget that being a parent is possibly one of the most isolating, stressful, amazing, life-changing moments of your life, and for lots of women it's a really lonely time if you're on your own, or if your partner works long hours, if you're on the island and you don't have any family. We do seem to have created a real family at Baby Chino. We have had mummies who've come in and literally who we've never met before, who've got to the front step, burst into tears and gone, "We heard you were really nice here."
Oh, lovely.
That tends to happen, I would say, every couple of weeks we have one or two. And it's normally, you know, I my staff team are just amazing.
How many have you got?
I've got two, and I've got one on maternity leave at the moment.
Of course.
which is great. I love that even my staff are creating me new customers. And I can just do a little wave, you know, sign a tea for a cup of tea, and they'll bring over a cup of tea, and we'll take Mum to the side, make sure she's all right, give her a little bit of a patch up, do the whole, you know what, chick, it's hard.
Yes.
I get it's hard. It's tough.
Oh, that's
what
lovely.
What can we do?
Because as well as winning the Venus Award, I think you've got another accolade that probably means just as much, if not more, to you, which is the title of Mummy to the Mummies.
Yeah, one of my mums called me that. It was really lovely. And that does seem to be kind of what's happening, which is great. You know, I'm very much a woman's woman. That's not to say, you know, men aren't welcome or I hate men or anything like that, not at all. I just seem to have an affinity to very feminine things, and you know, motherhood is something that I'm passionate about. I'm passionate about the fact that it's hard, and that if you sit and you work out what you do every day,
it's phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really, you don't know. You literally don't know how you do it.
No.
Do you get many dads coming in?
Yes. Not as many as mums, but we do.
So they're welcome.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and grandparents as well.
And do they get the same vibe as the mums? Do they get the same satisfaction out of it as you're saying the mums do? Do you think?
I think so. I've got to say this. Probably even sound slightly sexist, but I always try a little bit harder with the guys because I'm aware that sometimes we only have one or two in at a time, whereas we can have 15, 20 mums in. So I always, you know, make sure that I'll start a little conversation with them or do something to make them feel
Do the other mums tend to gravitate towards the dad and think, I'll help you change the nappy? Ah, oh, he's crying. I'll take the baby from you. No, they don't do
really.
That.
Really?
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, not really. I mean, all of the dads that we have come in, they're really hands-on with their children. It's lovely, and they very much treat it as, this is my time with my kid, and I'm gonna, you know, make the most of it.
Is there a fee to come in, or is it all just you buy your coffee?
Yeah,
how does it work?
It's £2. Mm-hmm. But the children get a free drink with that, so if you come in and that's all you want is a little play for half an hour, then you haven't got to spend any more.
Brilliant.
Than the £2. Again, we also have people who come in, pay the £2, the kid gets a drink, they then have a coffee and a cake, and then they'll stay for lunch, and then, you know, possibly another cake. We do cake really, really well.
No. Who makes your cakes?
Lots of people.
Okay, so they're homemade?
Half of them homemade. It's difficult from a stock point of view to keep in so many homemade ones. So
you've
we
got
do have enough. A couple.
You've got some.
Yeah,
which
we
is
have
good.
Hannah's Cupcakes make our cupcakes. We have a lot from the gluten-free twins. We are we have a good gluten-free selection and a good dairy-free selection. A lot of mums whose children have dairy allergies know that they can come in and feed their child, and a lot of mums who are breastfeeding have to be dairy-free as well because their children have dairy allergies. So we have dairy-free cake, so they can still have their chocolate cake and they can have a soy latte rather than a standard Lovely. Milk latte. So, you know, we can treat all of our mummies and our kids.
Regular listeners to the show will know that if you talk cake, you know, you're always welcome on this one.
Yes, I do.
We love cake here.
We don't have bad cake.
So I know that you told me that you set this up. I mean, this incredible business that won an award within the first 6 months, or two awards within the first 6 months. You set this up with zero experience.
Yeah, it was a really crazy thing to do.
Yeah, but yeah, it's paid off, isn't it?
Yeah, some days it's paid off.
Huge learning curve?
Huge, and still learning.
And do you regret having started the journey?
No. No, I don't regret it. There were obviously things I would do differently.
Like what?
I managed to get a government startup grant, and two friends who lent me the money to get it going. But we literally, when the doors opened, we had nothing. It was a case of, well, you have to float from day one. That's really stressful when you know that you're gambling with your... At the time, I was a single parent and had been for a long time. When you're gambling with your family's future and your home and your everything, and when you're working 12, 15 hours a day and you come back and have to apologise to your child again because someone's picked him up from school, it's really tough.
Yeah.
You know, there are times that I feel where I have to choose between the work that I do, and it's more than just a job,
Is it 24/7? I mean, it must be. That combined with looking after your son, Niall, isn't it? You've got an 8-year-old.
Yes, I have.
So you're non-stop, I would think.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes there's weekends as well, and very often it's get up, wrestle child to school, go to work for the day, get home, wrestle food into child, put food child to bed, you know, normal nighttime tussles, and then start work again because there's so much you've got to get done for the next day. And that's been far harder than I thought it would be. And there have been days when, you know, I've kind of felt like it's a choice, and both are important, obviously, for different reasons. You know, I have one child, he is my number one, but actually I've got a whole staff team, and I've got a whole group of people and a whole load of things that are happening the next day, and there is no, I'll just have an early night.
No.
You know, it's okay until something goes wrong, and then it's very difficult.
So do you have a good support team around you for those moments?
I have really, really awesome staff. They are amazing. All of my non-apprentice staff have all been single parents and our parents. So they are, we basically kind of pull together, and if I need time, they jump in, and the same the other way around. You know, we're all pretty flexible. Outside of that, you know, my parents still work. They have their own lives. They pitch in when they can. I have really awesome friends.
Good. So there are people you can call on in those
there
moments
are.
When you need your friend. And
not that
need...
it makes you feel any better, but actually there are.
Yes. Yeah. No, I think that's absolutely vital when you're a single working mum, because I've been there. I know those particular challenges.
Yeah.
You've got to have somebody that you can phone up, or a pool of people that you can say, please, I'm really up against it. Could you just look after them for an hour or so?
Yeah.
Just help out.
Yeah. I mean, my partner's recently moved in, and he is... Well, he rocks, actually, and I cannot believe how much easier and smoother things run, because there's, you know, I've got a wingman.
Exactly.
That has made huge amounts of difference, but it's also made me realise how much I have taken on in the last year and a half, 2 years. And, you know, there's a little bit more breathing space this week than there was 2 months ago, you know, which is
brilliant.
It's great.
I mean, please hear that.
Yeah.
Yes. And does Niall come to the cafe?
He does. I try to limit that as much as possible. In the beginning, I thought, yeah, I'm going to have a child-friendly space, and if I've got to work, he can come to work with me. You know, the dream that us parents have, that it would just be great. He'll sit there and play with the children, and I'll just serve, and it will just work. And it doesn't.
No.
At all. It's very difficult for me to separate being mum to... running a business, and children do know how to play on you, so I'll be serving somebody and that will be the point where he's trying to run off with a cake.
Good boy.
Yeah,
like,
well done,
you,
well done. Yeah. So, or I'll be in the middle of something and that will be the point that he'll choose to be unhappy or need me above anybody else in the universe or anything else. So the dream of having this business where I could integrate him and it would all just work and life would be easy, it didn't happen.
No.
No.
And you've got another challenge, haven't you? Because you were telling me Niall has additional needs.
Yes. Yeah. Well, obviously that does make things harder, both at home and at work, or school or everything else. It does put me in a unique position. One of the roles we seem to have taken on is parents who are concerned about different elements of their children's behaviour, not quite knowing where to go, or feeling uncomfortable if they're out with friends or out in public because their children behave in a different way.
Yes.
They do know that they're very welcome and that I will back them.
And they can fall asleep on your sofa and you wake them up with a cup of tea.
Yeah, you know, it has happened. That tends to happen with the weenie babies,
yes,
where the mums just
exhausted,
come in half comatose. Yes, but that has happened. Sometimes, you know, I had a mum a few weeks ago who got to the bank and her child had a total full-on meltdown. And it was a case of, I can either go home and sit on my own and cry, or I can come to Baby Chino and they'll give me a cup of tea and I'll have a shoulder and cry. And you know, she made the right choice and we patched her up and we patched the kid up and they were fine, you know. is I like to think we're a bit like a plaster.
Yeah.
You know, we can't fix stuff because, you know, things are what they are. But actually, there are little ways that you can make lots of differences.
You sound to me it's like you're a really good friend. So you are the sort of mummy that every other mummy would want to go to, offload a bit, because there seems to be so much love and warmth and empathy coming from you to them. And they know that you're a sort of safe haven, really.
Yeah, I think so, maybe.
Yeah, you are that friend.
I love that element of what I do. I think that that's really missing in society. Years ago, you would go, I remember when I was a kid, we'd go around my neighbour's house and the mums would have a coffee and they'd discuss about, you know, what was happening with the kids, or this happened or the other happened. And we had this, like, secure network of people, and we felt secure in our ability to deal with things and the advice that we would get from other mummies and the peer support that we had. That's really disappeared in the last 10, 20 years or so. People are on their own. They are second guessing themselves. Everything is about, you know, covering yourself.
Very much, yes.
And, you know, we do lose sight of the fact that we do have a lot of knowledge and things, and we, you know, I like to think that one of the things that we do is encourage people to trust their instincts, and, you know, and to go, you know what,
just be
come
human
and have a hug.
Let's be human.
Definitely. And obviously, you know, every mum is different. Everything that they believe in is different. For me, I say, for anyone who's working for me, I don't mind what your personal beliefs are. I don't mind whether you think breast is better than bottle. I don't mind if you think, you know, baby-led weaning over jars. I actually don't mind, care if you like what you think or feel, but that stays at the door.
Yes.
And that within these walls, we are all just mummies. We're all mummies, and we are all doing the best that we can do for our children. And most of the time, that's enough. And some of the time for us, personally, our best doesn't feel good enough, and that's the time when you need a little bit of a hug, a cup of tea, somewhere to go, some space, a time out, and a smile.
Yes, and I think you're clearly doing very well at providing that. So lovely. And I think you've got a special offer on at the moment, haven't you, for free entry?
Yeah, before 11 o'clock. We're quite quiet in the morning.
What time
at the
do
moment.
You open?
10.
So from 10 till 11,
yeah.
It's free entry.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they come, then can they stay sort of
stay as long as you like?
Oh, lovely.
I've never had to kick anyone out. I often have to bribe children out. We have balloons and stickers and bubbles and various other things to help smooth that.
Oh, how lovely. And do you do children's parties there?
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yep,
so it can all happen at that fantastic venue, mm-hmm, where pretty much anything goes if you're under 5.
Yeah.
And less stress on the parents.
Yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful. Okay, so more of this. And the Dancing with Snakes, as I promised you. And some Christmas poetry. So we've got quite a little eclectic. Can never say that word. I'll get it after the break. Okay, so that was my pratfall for the day. You've been wondering when that was going to come in. There it is. There's always one. Okay, speak to you soon.
Stay social and get in touch. It's at Vectors Radio on Twitter. The World Wide Web never felt so local.
Hello and welcome back to Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and my special guest, Rebecca Blashford, owner and founder of Bebicino Cafe in Newport. Welcome back.
Thanks.
Hi. And just before the break, we spoke a lot about the cafe, and it really does seem to be the go-to place for young mums who just need a little bit of a chill out and a catch up with a coffee and somewhere safe and happy where their kids can play. It just sounds the ideal place. And like you were saying, it's a wonderful venue for parties as well, and dads are welcome. So it's got it all going on, hasn't it?
It's certainly busy. Yeah.
And homemade cake, got to get in that, because that's my big thing. But I just want to talk about, because I've seen this wonderful picture of you on Facebook. You didn't send it to me, but I found it and I thought, is that her? It just this amazingly glamorous picture of you in Middle Eastern dance costume with, what is it, a boa constrictor around your neck?
No, it's a Burmese python called Cleo.
Oh, of course. Yes. So tell us, how did that shot come about?
Last Friday, there's a lovely restaurant bar in Cowes called Moo, and they had a Moroccan themed evening supper club, and they said, would I come and dance? So I did, and we did my sets, and they had arranged for the really great guys from White Vipers to come and bring some snakes afterwards, and I'd kind of already sussed the audience by then, so I said, well, do you want me to walk round with them? So I gained Cleo, and we kind of walked round and introduced her to all the people that were there having their dinner.
So she's obviously non-venomous.
No, she's a constrictor, so she would squeeze you rather than...
Oh, I see, okay.
...bite you.
Okay, so you're obviously a lot more up on snakes than I am.
Them for a long time when I was a child, but in the days when you were allowed to keep slow worms and grass snakes and things that you found under a brick, not like today. It's not something I've ever been scared of.
Okay.
But I've never had full costume and a snake, which is quite exciting.
Yeah. So just going back to the snake and the constricting thing,
mm-hmm.
is it because they're frightened that they're going to do that, or what makes them do
that's
that?
That's how they would kill their prey.
Yeah, but to you, when they're wrapped around you, what is there anything that you thought, I mustn't do that because they might just suddenly...
Not really. I think when they're nervous, they do tend to squeeze a little bit more, but actually she... probably wasn't big enough to do anything.
Okay. And had she wrapped herself around your neck in a massive figure eight and tied a bow, how would her handler have... What's the trick to get her to free you?
I have no idea. Oh. I probably should have asked that first. I mean, she's only 11 months old, and she was a big girl.
How long?
Very friendly. I would say about 5 foot, whoa. 6 foot. Yeah, there wasn't any point which I felt that she was too tight or unhappy, or, you know, she was seemed very sociable, and, you know, was happily, her head was kind of slithering towards other people and saying hi, and she was loving the fuss.
And was the tongue coming out, the little forked tongue? Is it a forked tongue?
Oh, yes.
I think I've got forked tongues.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, it's not something that I've had huge amounts to do with.
And there's no venom on the tongue, is there, in any snake? They just look pretty evil, don't they?
Yeah.
Mm. So did you dance with Cleo?
No, I didn't, because they arrived afterwards. There are special licences you have to have for actually performing snakes. There are a few belly dancers in the UK who do. But to be fair, I'd want my own and to know that I was comfortable with that.
And presumably you'd have to train with them, wouldn't you? You'd have to dance with them and get them used to the moves so that they can throw a few shapes and things themselves.
Maybe. Yeah, I've never actually seen anyone dance with a snake. I've seen lots of snakes in Middle Eastern countries and things, and lots of dancers, but I've never seen them together except either in America or I know that there are some there, and there are some in the UK as well.
So you couldn't team up on Strictly or anything like that?
No.
I've just got a vision of one of them in his little dicky bow, you know, spats, zipping around. Oh, but fantastic. So how, and you were Miss Belly Dance UK, weren't you, a few years ago? You came third.
I was third, yeah. That was a bit of a shock. Actually, it was only a couple of years after I had my son, so I was feeling a bit, you know, a bit rubbish about how children don't put your body back where they find them or where they find everything, and it was a really great experience. I had a sash and everything. It was kind of fun.
So how did it all happen? You're sitting here as if it's the most normal thing in the world to belly dance, as if it's the most normal thing in the world to have a snake wrapped around your neck, and I'm thinking, no, not in my experience, never. So how did it all begin?
Okay, well, I guess I was an unusual child, shall we say. When it came to choosing a college or staying on at school, the Isle of Wight College in those days had about four choices. You could do beauty, and I very much have the face for radio.
Don't say that.
cookery, and I'd blown up microwaves. Hairdressing,
microwave.
Yeah, I blew up a microwave.
How did you manage that? And now you work in catering. All that good that you've done about Baby Chino, now people go, no, she's gonna block going there.
I was only small, but I did manage to do it with some silver foil.
Quite that spectacularly. Trick.
But it was gold, and silver foil was silver, right?
Okay. And how did that go down with your mum?
She forgave me.
Good
I wasn't allowed to use a microwave for a while.
No.
No. And there was car mechanics, and I didn't really fancy that. And there was childcare, and I'm the eldest of eight kids, so quite frankly, I'd had enough of that.
You'd been there, done that.
So there just, I just felt like there wasn't anything here for me. I always wanted to do performing arts, although I never had dance lessons, singing lessons, drama lessons. It was just something that I always wanted to do. So I found myself a course in Southampton when I was 16, and I travelled backwards and forwards and worked a part-time job to pay for it. To get my studies paid for me, I had to do so many hours a month to be considered full-time, and I did philosophy as one of my A-level subjects. And when that had finished, we had to choose something else to keep the hours up. I didn't know what to choose, but I'd met an amazing group of women on the philosophy course, and they'd gone, well, we only did philosophy because we couldn't get into belly dancing. And you know, for a little girl on the Isle of Wight, I was like, what, they actually do that in this country? Because, you know, I hadn't really been any further north than Southampton, so it was quite a big deal. So I went along and stood at the back, really uncoordinated, really wasn't getting it, was going to give up. And my drama teacher basically said, you know what, you have no dance skills or ability, you don't sing, and you would make a great character actress, but you're not going to get anywhere unless you can prove that you can dance as well. And I thought, well, I can't blag 15 years of classical ballet training or dance training at these interviews and auditions. There's no way that I will pick up in a year what people have spent 15 years doing. So I decided that no one knew anything about belly dance, and I was really good at blagging stuff. So I would do that. I would go out and do something really easy in a costume that they didn't recognise and perform it really, really well, and try and get in that way. So that's what I did.
And that's what you did spectacularly well.
Well, I didn't get into drama school, but I didn't fail anything particularly either. Then one day my teacher said, I'm not very well, here's a costume and a CD, you're booked at this restaurant in about 6 hours time. I'd been dancing for 6 months.
Goodness.
And I felt very poorly before I went on, and went and did it, came off, and they sacked my teacher and wanted me, which was really uncomfortable.
Oh gosh, difficult.
Yes, it wasn't, yeah.
How did you handle that?
I said I would only cover for her because I obviously didn't want to steal her job, but in the end she gave up and I had it anyway, but more because she had chosen that than because I'd taken it away.
And did you remain friends?
For a long time.
Oh good.
Yeah. Good.
Really did put you in a horrible position.
It was
position,
a really awkward
it?
Position. Yeah, it wasn't much fun. And then I had loads of really exciting opportunities. My ex-husband was a professional ballroom dancer. And the studio he worked at, they said, we want to try belly dancing classes. Can you do a tester and see if there's any interest? And I'm like, well, you know, I'm not a teacher. I just perform and do a few gigs. And I turned up and they had to split the class in half because all the ladies couldn't fit in the room. So all of a sudden I'm teaching two nights a week. Then all of a sudden I'm working 60 hours a week because I'm performing two and teaching three or four and working full time. It was really great fun.
Yeah, my goodness.
Yeah, wow. I performed in the West End. I joined a group of dancers and we went out to Algeria to do one of the five-star hotels, Christmas do's. And out there, the lobster was sky
just
high.
Just amazing, wasn't it?
It was a totally different experience, totally. I've been flown out to Guernsey to dance at a millionaire's 60th birthday party, again with some of the Strictly crew.
Wow. It was true. Yeah. Well done. Well done,
yeah.
You.
Darren and Lilia. I found Lilia trying to shimmy behind a tree, and I just walked past and said, you need to bend your knees a bit more. it has been awesome. It's been great.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I've had lots of fun.
Are you regularly dancing on the island? Can we come and see you?
No, it's really difficult to get the work on the island. And that's one of the reasons that I don't do it so much anymore. I am a cabaret dancer. That's the side that I like. I like dinner parties, restaurants. I don't really like stage dancing particularly much. I kind of like to see the whites of the eyes of my audience, you know. And I'm very into the interaction between the audience and and the dancer. So for me, it's very much entertainment, but there are a few places on the island that actually want to pay out for a dancer. Yeah, I tend not to teach so much. I did damage my back a couple of years ago.
And was that through the dancing?
No, but I'm hypermobile, so the same thing that makes me able to do the things that should be hard very easily, it's just so easy to overstretch. So
I see. Is that a bit like being double jointed?
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
So it you know, I have a spine very much like the snakes, which is fine until a disc pops out.
Ooh, painful. Yeah, very painful.
Kind of.
So are you in pain now?
Today, yes, I'm all taped up.
Oh no, well, you're doing a really good job of masking that. So you're not about to do a little mini performance at the cafe for the mums?
No, I have some of the evenings we have done. We had, as I said, I'm kind of passionate about the women's health side of things. We had a very unusual evening on menstruation, and we had many holistic practitioners and things in, and various specialists in their field, and I got up with the dancers and we had a bit of a dance. Some of the other belly dance groups on the island as well, which was great fun. It's very womanly. Everyone thinks you dance for guys and you just walk around with no clothes on. It's just not the case. I've never danced for a male only audience, and I've never danced, you know, for a man. I dance for women and I dance for myself.
For yourself.
Mm.
And I imagine it's a very good fun way of keeping fit.
Yes. Yeah, it is. It's very good if you for building waistlines. So
a bit like hula hooping.
Yes.
A similar sort
very
of
much.
Movement, isn't it?
Yeah. So, you know, I think that you can carry being a slightly chunkier lady if you have, you know, a little waist. So for me, at my biggest I was a 16, smallest a 12, but I only ever had a tiny waist, so, you know, kind of more like I always called it a 24 hourglass figure. Uh-huh. Than an hourglass, but yeah.
How many of these gorgeous sequin costumes do you have?
Well, I have a bit of a habit for them, so probably about 8.
Lovely. And they come rainbow colours, I imagine.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Have you got a favourite one? A lucky one?
Yes, I have. By a Cairo designer who unfortunately isn't with us anymore, called Madame Hekmet, and it's all rainbow colours and white.
So it's Cairo as in Egypt, not chiropractor.
Yes. Cairo, yes.
Right.
Yeah, Cairo as in Egypt.
Yeah. So that's the real deal then.
Oh, it's beautiful, really beautiful. I feel it's almost like got a mermaid style skirt, and I feel like, particularly being kind of curvy, I always felt good in that one.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
So do you think I could persuade you at some point to do a show, because I'd love to come see you. I mean,
sure.
Could you put something together?
Yeah,
it would just be wonderful. And then perhaps come on and tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Is there any chance you could do anything before in the run-up to Christmas?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, because it seems to be upon us so much quicker this year than I've ever... I know everybody says that every year, but we're not even in December. And it's not just the shops. I've noticed people have got lights in their gardens, which is all beautiful and lovely, but I feel so way behind. I don't know about you, but I've done nothing.
I purposely haven't. For me, Christmas doesn't start till December. Mm. My little boy's birthday is on the 3rd of December. And I think I feel like he should have his birthday, and that's his little time before we then start doing the Christmas stuff.
Oh, lovely.
And also, it's very difficult when you've got the stuff up. I feel like we don't do the same things with our families, or we don't have the same special things that we do that we once would have done, like making the Christmas cake, making the mince pies. My nan used to make eggnog.
Lovely.
And you know, we'd make the icing for the cake and stir in some coins into, you know, probably really unsanitary, into a pudding, and, you know, all the things that you would do as a family, and they were big deals. I feel like we don't do so many of them anymore, and because we string out the amount of time that Christmas goes on for, it kind of loses how special it should be. So, you know, for us, very definitely it happens later. With work with the cafe, there are no decorations up, and there won't be until December.
Okay.
And we do have some really amazing plans this year. They are incredibly exciting.
Looking forward to that. Is Santa going to be there?
Yes, but and so much more.
Okay, brilliant. Oh, so that's a real destination to come meet Santa then?
Very definitely will be something very different this year.
Perfect. And I think you've got... something we're going to be doing on the next 3 weeks on the run-up to Christmas is some little slot with just some fun Christmas poems, just little short ones. And we're going to start today with Rebecca, who's kindly going to recite one of her original pieces.
Oh, yeah, it's not mine.
Oh, it's not yours. That's fine.
No, actually, my nan taught it me when I was a little girl. And it's the one that always pops into my head every year at Christmas when I'm the one wrapping the presents and doing the work. It's called Where Art Thou Mother Christmas.
Okay.
Where art thou Mother Christmas? I really wish I knew why father should get all the praise and no one mentions you. I bet you buy the presents and wrap them large and small, and in the end our cunning friend pretends he's done it all. So up with Mother Christmas, that uncomplaining slave, and down with Father Christmas, that good for nothing knave.
There's an ad on at the moment, and I'm not going to say who it's for, but they've got Mother Christmas in there, haven't they? And she's very sleek. She almost looks like a businesswoman. And she's doing the work, and she sends the present off in a van. And she's got these black leather gloves on.
Ooh.
And so she looks more like an assassin. And I don't know, it's just sort of, I thought that's not Christmas for me.
I don't have a TV, so I've not seen it. Although I have just bought all of my staff elf outfits. I might not be the most popular boss in the world.
I saw you've done that. So when are they, so they're not going to be decked out in those till next week?
Oh yeah, yeah. It won't be until our Christmas world amazingness that's coming in is coming in over the weekend of the 3rd, 4th. So until the Monday after. They've got a reprieve.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to ask what you're going to be dressed in a minute. And I'm just going to read a couple of very short sort of nostalgic pieces back from my childhood, which is sort of early 60s, and just from a little book of mine, The Things You Missed While You Were Away. And it's called Goat, the Nun and My Mum. The nativity at my convent school saw the best behaved girl cast as the Virgin Mary and the prettiest child as Angel Gabriel. The teacher took one look at me and told me to play the goat. Disappointed, but not defeated, I looked for something new to bring to the role and decided to play the beast with a Cockney accent. The audience couldn't understand a word I said. Sister Teresa did her best to mime my lines, but her range was very limited. Mary will have a baby tonight. Proved an interesting challenge. The following year, she cast me as a palm tree. Being stuck inside the trunk with strict instructions not to make a sound didn't stop me taking centre stage as I fell at the feet of baby Jesus in an unscripted display of awe. The audience loved it, but Sister Mary Teresa hated me for ruining her production, wrestling me into the wings and pulling off my palm frond headdress. Get back on stage and let everyone see who you are, you wicked girl! I ran on to rapturous applause, and Sister Teresa brought the curtain down on my head.
I was trying really hard not to laugh all the way through that.
Oh, thank you. Yes, such was my childhood, Rebecca. So just tell me quickly, what costume are you going to be wearing?
At the moment, I also have an elf outfit. I figured I should lead by example.
I wanted you to be Mrs. Santa Claus.
I nearly did that, very nearly.
But you can mix and match, though, surely, can't you?
Sure.
It's not too late.
I'm the boss.
Yeah,
I can do what
you
like.
Do you like. And reindeer, donkeys?
I'd like some real ones, but I don't think that's going to happen. I tend not to dress as a donkey. I don't really have a donkey this year.
No, okay.
No.
Not the front half or the back half.
I've been the back end of a horse.
I think we all have at one time or another. All feel we have.
But yeah.
That's how I kind of live my life, actually, is the back end of a horse.
Me too.
Yeah, although it's just going to be wonderful. So that all kicks off, is that December the 1st?
Probably about the 5th, yeah.
Okay. Right, yep. Something really to look forward to then, to put that day on your advent calendar.
Yes, and from there until Christmas Eve.
So if people haven't found you in Newport, can you just sort of remind people whereabouts you are?
Yes, we're one of those places that if you don't know where we are, we're not that easy to find. If you're heading down the high street, so you're heading towards Coppins Bridge and you're going away from Yates's and the Hogshead, and what used to be Bywise Store 21. Just past there, there is a sign company on the right-hand side and we are underneath.
Okay.
So we're opposite County Hall, but we're opposite the old entrance of County Hall with the beautiful sort of circular steps just outside.
Lovely. Okay. And if you've got as far as the police station, you've gone way too far.
And if you're lost, call us and we'll come out and wave, because that happens all the time. There is nearly always, well, a bit of Christmas elf waving outside. You won't be able to miss us.
Fantastic. I love the way you navigated that through a lot of pubs there. So
yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
What does that say about me?
Exactly. Well, you're full of the Christmas spirit. That's what it says.
I do.
And I'm just going to do another short little reading from this same little chapter, just as a final one to put you in the Christmassy mood. And like I say, we're back in the 1960s, so it's very different how it is now. Every year, Mum enjoyed spending the money she had earned from delivering the Christmas post on festive frippery. The sideboard was awash with bottles of drink destined never to be drunk: eggnog, cherry brandy, ginger wine, and baby sham. The sort of selection only a teetotal would buy. No wonder we never had any visitors. They'd probably got wind of what was on offer. We would trudge around the local greengrocers to find the perfect tree, small enough to fit in the bay window and have a root, so we could once again experience the disappointment of planting it on the 6th of January, only to discover it had died by the 16th. Once we'd found what Mum considered to be the perfect specimen, we wheeled it home in her tartan shopping trolley, as I prayed we didn't bump into anyone from school. If we did, my plan was to jump in the bag alongside the tree. The fairy lights brought out Mum's dark side. They never worked first time, and spent a fraught afternoon testing each bulb, playing a festive version of Russian roulette and wondering which one of us would get electrocuted first. Our fairy doll was an emaciated creature in urgent need of a turkey dinner. Decked out in yellowing white tulle, she became more skew-whiff with each passing year. Halo or no halo, she'd been on the baby sham. Every year, Mum worked her Christmas magic, transforming our bare front room into a winter wonderland. Cotton wool created a blanket of snow along the mantelpiece, compact mirrors were frozen lakes, and Christmas cake decorations added life to a land where perspective had no place. Robins towered over churches, and elves dwarfed fir trees. One year, the cat ate the sugar-paste Father Christmas and sicked it up on the sofa. There's nothing like a headless Santa covered in vomit to kill the magic. As we stayed home with only a glycemic cat for company, I imagined other families rocking round their Christmas trees as glamorously dressed women danced with their husbands, pausing only to chink glasses and kiss under the mistletoe. Meanwhile, my mum was simultaneously defrosting and cooking the turkey with the hairdryer. Merry Christmas. So, Christmas plans, how are they looking?
For the cafe?
For home.
Home's going to be a very special Christmas this year. It's obviously the first one with my partner.
Yes.
So, first one with a guy for a very long time, 5 years. And his children are coming too. So we'll have all three boys together. I'm working up to Christmas Eve, where we do a Christmas Eve party at the cafe, which is just lovely. Really awkward bit between the shop shutting and the kids going to bed. We try and fill with really nice things. My little boy his dad's over to see him. He lives in America. So I'll have some time without him, which is going to be really weird. And then I'm closing the cafe between Christmas and New Year. All of the boys are going back
to
their
other
parents.
That's now called officially Twixmas. Yes, that period between Christmas and New Year.
Okay.
That is now called Twixmas. It had to be called something, didn't it?
Yeah, of course. So we are going away, like two grown-ups.
Where?
For a couple of days. It looks like we're going to go to Malta.
Lovely.
But we've never not had at least one child around, so, and I'm always working. And even when I'm home, I'm still working. So the laptop's staying on the Isle of Wight.
Oh, definitely.
And the doors will be locked on the cafe. I'm turning my phone off, I think. I think that's what's going to happen.
So you can have a proper grown-up holiday.
I'm very definitely ready for it.
Oh, so much so. I hope you have a wonderful time.
Thank you.
And a very, very happy Christmas.
Thank you.
Look forward to coming to the cafe before and perhaps hopefully seeing you dance.
Yeah.
So it's been a real joy and an inspiration talking to you today, Rebecca. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And please join me next week when my guest will be Helen Redding. She's another dancer, but slightly very different to Rebecca. So I'm looking forward to speaking to her. And also we'll be joined by poet Donna Jones, who'll be doing some Christmas offerings to put you in the festive mood. So if it's a bit early for you to start Christmas this weekend, I hope you have a lovely time, whatever you're doing. If not, go and find a lovely pub with an open fire and enjoy that eggnog and mulled wine. Look forward to speaking to you this time next week. Bye-bye now. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye. www.vectusradio.com